Okay, there we go. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to our December call. A special welcome to those of you who are from brand new chapters. So if you're from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Orange County, North Central California, Longmont, Colorado, Orlando, Florida, or Northern Kentucky, Kentucky, special welcome to all of you. We'll be introducing our special guest, Jose Aguto, one of the really best friends of this organization for a long time, in a few minutes. But I just want to start the call by giving you some of the comments that people have been sending in as they've been sending in their donations for the year-end appeal. So you can actually read what people wrote as you track. You hit the donate button on our website, you can see the comments. And I just want to read you five really brief comments of things that people have been saying as they've been submitting their donations. First one says, to all in CCL who have committed the best of themselves to address the climate crisis and, in doing so, have also empowered each of us to find our civic voices, resulting in lasting, meaningful change. I am honored and humbled to be a part of the CCL legacy. That's from Lisa Del Buono in Upper Michigan. Thank you for that, Lisa. My Aunt Jan's dying wish was to pass a carbon fee and take the next step in solving the climate crisis. Melissa Katz, thank you for the donation. Thank you for that comment. And we all very, very much miss your incredible Aunt Jan. CCE is on the leading edge of engaging citizen participation in our government and enabling our members of Congress to work together across party lines. The only legislation that lasts is bipartisan. CCE's work makes better citizens and better government and is moving towards solutions to solve our climate crisis. Mindy Aller, so well said, thank you. I belong to 10 environmental organizations, but my heart lies with CCL. The most common sense solution and wonderful training. If you had told me 2 years ago I would be lobbying with a member of Congress, I would have told you, no way. Now I do. And I have over a dozen letters to the editor published. I spread the message far and wide. Thank you. Last one. I joined CCL because its goals are simple and direct, and its political action processes and methods are sophisticated and nonpartisan and extremely effective. Consequently, I want to monetarily support CCL for those very same reasons. So thank you all, everybody who has donated, everybody who's written comments in. I try to read all of them. I want to put a special shout out to those of you who've donated anonymously and used characters from Game of Thrones. I thought that was funny every single time. So for anybody who wants to continue to do that, I thought that was just great and I appreciate you doing so. Okay, so we asked our friend Jose Aguto to come back. He was on the call 3 years ago. And when he was on for 3 years ago, he was with the Friends National Committee on Legislation. And he's recently moved over to Catholic Climate Covenant. And so we wanted to get an update from him of how the perspective works from here. So, you know, Jose has a long history. He's given his life to this work. If you look at the action sheet, you see that he's currently with Catholic Climate Covenant, that he was at the Friends National Committee on Legislation for a long time. He was also with the National Congress for American Indians. And Jose, you can see that there was lots of questions for all those different categories. People wanted to know about how to deal with their local Catholic church. People wanted to know about the broader mission of what you think could be accomplished. They wanted to know how they could reach out to their local Friends National Committee. They wanted to know how to reach out to local tribal leaders. So this spurred an enormous amount of interest in all kinds of things you might address. And so we're very interested in all the things you want to say. Here's the last thing I want to say about Jose before I turn the call over to him. I initially wrote Jose and asked him to be our December guest, and then I didn't hear from him for a week. And that was kind of surprising because this is someone that we're so close and we so work with. And so I followed him up and I said, Jose, you know, could you please confirm with me if you could do this or not? And he wrote me back this simple message saying, I didn't respond initially because I didn't know if I had something to say. Now, if there's anybody who has something to say about climate, it's Jose. But this is this kind of honest humility that's also so stunning about him. It's so humbling to work with someone like this. And we're so grateful that you could be back on the call. Welcome back, friend.
Thank you, Mark. And thank you, everyone, on this call. I'm blessed to be with you and to share my thoughts. I'm going to try and do that. So in response to the questions that you provided, Mark, I laid out a presentation which has a fair bit of background, which would then hopefully get us to sort of the nuts and bolts of how you can work better with the Catholic Church and other people of faith, as well as tribes. And so I'm going to start with the broad picture here, and I know that many of you already feel this in your hearts. What is known in the climate community is that for us to envision a thriving future, and for us to prevent climate catastrophe, we need a climate Marshall Plan of enormous scale. And we also need, importantly, as was said by Walter Monk, one of the greatest oceanographers of all time, we need a miracle of love and unselfishness. And we know that humankind has evolved technologically, physically, intellectually, economically, but what we haven't as a human race applied in practice is our moral and spiritual values. We haven't reflected them collectively, and this is an essential part of the crisis that we're in. And the miracle is the golden rule, applied across humanity collectively. And what we need to embrace, unlike any other generations have ever done so before. And the reason I'm in the moral frame or in the faith frame is because the faith traditions do have already a moral framework by which we can apply this. And that is the concepts of reconciliation, of redemption, of love and forgiveness, and even most courageously, perhaps, love of thy enemy or love of thy friend in waiting. And these are the principles that many of you already carry out, for example, in your outreach to Congress, that we need to embrace and spread throughout the world. And that is why I'm in this space, in order to build bridges, recognizing, for example, that the political divide is vast on climate change, but then also that many Americans affiliate more so with their politics rather than their faith. And we need, I believe, again, to avert climate catastrophe, we all need to embrace what it is that we feel inside, what is our core moral values, and issue forth from there. And so the example is, as Mark was describing, we at FCNL back in December 12, 2012, began an interfaith moral call to action with evangelicals, Quakers, Catholics, of Jewish people, recognizing the need for a moral, nonpartisan call to action to Congress to recognize the climate science and to commit to action. And after 20 months and over 50 interfaith delegations, which we helped cultivate to meet with their legislators, Karen Frischkoff, one of your members, stepped in and brought in, and it's very important for me to name these dear souls, Joseph and Constant Mondale, who are Catholic, Nancy Smith, the Quaker, Rafe Sanderson, Presbyterian, and Pamela Lapis from the United Church of Christ. They met with Representative Chris Gibson 20 months later, since the very beginning of this call, and persuaded Representative Chris Gibson in late September of 2014 to commit to this to that Gibson resolution. In December of that year, we then called Danny Richter and other representatives from other sectors to join in a multi-sectoral, discrete, grassroots, grass tops, peer lobbying effort that ultimately resulted in the introduction of the Gibson resolution in September of 2015, which was a spark to the tinder and the firewood that Jay Butera had been laying, which we now call the House Climate Solutions Conference. So that's how we help bridge partisan divides. And in March 2017, I then moved to the Catholic Climate Covenant. I am a practicing Catholic, but then also recognizing that I wanted to help the U.S. Catholic Church more fully embrace Laudato Si. And so before I get into the work at the Covenant, I wanted to broaden it out a little bit and talk a little bit about the Catholic Church so it will help inform the discussion moving forward. As we all know, the Catholic Church is nearly 2,000 years old. It is incredibly, incredibly rich in complexity, sophistication, theological discussion and refinement, and diversity of almost unimaginable proportions. And I can't help but marvel at the various dimensions of the church. within the United States, and I'm going to focus on elements that I think are most relevant to you. Within the United States, there are 75 million Catholics. And these 75 million Catholics are greater than the next seven largest U.S. faith traditions combined. There are approximately 16.5 million Catholics who go to church on a weekly basis. There are 255 active bishops, and for our purposes, there are 36 archbishops and 144 diocesan bishops, so leaders of dioceses. These dioceses range in size, so approximately 180. These dioceses range in size from 4 million in Los Angeles to smaller dioceses such as 40,000 in Steubenville, Ohio. Their Congress, if you will, is called the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. And so they determine policy writ large for the U.S. Catholic Church. And I also wanted to make specific mention of Catholic Relief Services and Catholic Charities, and also the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, because each one of these organizations serves millions, if not collectively billions of people across the world with regard to disaster relief, aid, and other kinds of, and immigration, other kinds of services. So noting that there's an incredible charity within the Catholic Church. With regard to Catholic attitudes on climate change, they largely reflect those of the American population. They lean a slightly more supportive of concern about climate change, but you will see, and many of you are already familiar with the Yale's Center for Climate Communications, their Six Americas. We have Catholics across all six of those Americas. I mean, we have Paul Ryan on one side and Nancy Pelosi on the other. So you get a sense of the diversity and the challenge it is working in this space, or the opportunities to work in this space. There are reports and studies that came out with regard to Catholic attitudes, with regard to Laudato Si, and frankly, they reflected those of the American population as well. Those who are skeptical of climate change were not moved. Those who already are concerned about climate change, it strengthened their positions, and importantly, it gave them permission to step into the space within the Catholic Church, and that's probably the greatest added value. But you know, we were all hoping Laudato Si would be that moral moment that would move the needle of the moral compass towards climate action. That really hasn't happened, to be honest with you. But what it has done is it has created a warmth and a structure and a depth within the Catholic Church for us to step into this. And we're seeing percolations of this, both in theology as well as in practice. So for example, Cardinal Archbishop Gregory of Atlanta has created an entire Laudato Si program for his entire diocese. 2 months ago, I was blessed to attend two Laudato Si Care for Creation conferences, one held in Toledo, Ohio, one held in Burlington, Vermont, both of which were ably led by their bishops, Bishop Coyne in Burlington and Bishop Thomas in Toledo. And 150 to 200 people attended both of those events. So we're seeing this activity really percolate within the Catholic community, the mainstream Catholic community. We at the Covenant are seeing increases in our membership and engagement on issues related to climate change. So going to the Covenant relatively quickly, we at the Covenant work with 17 national partners, including the USCCB and Catholic Relief Services and Catholic Charities, to help guide the U.S. Policy and practices with regard to climate change. The analogy I would use is that we want to weave the green thread into the fabric of Catholic life. And so we do that, we try and do that from soup to nuts, both from the diversity of the opinions on climate change as well as the activities. So for example, on the grassroots level, we have nearly 300 creation care teams across the country with whom I would love to have some linkages with your members. We have what's called a pastor's training program in which we have been helping educate pastors on the theology and science of climate change and also Laudato Si, and how can they speak about that with their parishioners, both on a homiletics level as well as in practices, greening practices within their parishes and schools. We have activities like the Feast of St. Francis program, which has thousands of downloads and practices during St. Francis's feast day. And we also have, importantly, and I want to really focus on this as well, is our Catholic Energies program, which is a, if you will, a plug-and-play opportunity for any of you who are interested in greening your churches or parishes or Catholic hospitals or institutions to step into energy efficiency programs. We have a model which you can step into, and if you go to catholicenergies.org, that is your opportunity to do so. And then also with regard to policy, we at the Covenant are, we follow the USCCB's policy, which is a fairly broad one. And we, for example, have been supportive of the Stefanik resolution when the Gibson resolution was reintroduced, the House Climate Solutions Caucus, and support of the UNFCCC and the Green Climate Fund. And so most recently, as an indication of the vitality of what I would call the mainstream Catholic voices on climate change, we recently put out a letter in support of the UNCCC funding to the administration and Congress, seeing, even though that's just $10 million, symbolically or operationally, it's incredibly important that the U.S. remain engaged in the international scene and honor its commitments under the Paris Agreement. We had 172 leaders of U.S. Catholic institutions sign that letter, including the presidents of over 80 Catholic universities, orders, healthcare, NGOs. It was a marvelous, surprisingly successful effort, and we hope to engage on this sort of foundational level to lift up greater and more ambitious climate action. We're also working, for example, in support of the Clean Power Plan. Okay, so going to the question, how can I work better with Catholics in my area? And hearkening to what I spoke about earlier about the U.S. Catholic Church, pardon me while I get to my notes here, it's hierarchical. So that's the first thing. And in many respects, as I mentioned before, you can look at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops as Congress. We have been working with bishops where they are not comfortable talking about climate change. And you can imagine where they're located, primarily red states. We understand, that why that is. And then, of course, as I mentioned, those bishops who are stepping more affirmatively, both in policy and practice with regard to climate change. So each bishop you have to address according to where they are. And this is under the principle of subsidiarity, where there is deference given to the local bishops as to what they want to address, what their priorities are. And this goes for pastors as well. And then also when you talk about how do I talk to my bishops or my pastors, we all know that they all have an incredible array of obligations and duties and priorities, and which ones are they going to pick? That's up to each pastor and each bishop. So how do you engage? I would say, shorthand, is that you apply the principles of engagement that you have been practicing for so many years, which is to meet them where they are, to start where you find a willing Catholic. Could be a lay person. It could be the state Catholic conference director. It could be the peace and social justice coordinator within the diocese. It could be the pastor. So start with those whom you know, who have the same fire that you do to do this work, and then work upwards. So lastly, because we at the Covenant have this challenge of Catholics in Americas 1-6, and we want to weave the green thread throughout the fabric of Catholic life, we have specifically focused on our Catholic Energies program, which is an energy efficiency program, which, as many of you know, energy efficiency is the gateway activity towards climate action. This is an activity that can appeal to Catholics who don't want to say climate change. But then you can say, well, look at how much money you will save with energy efficiency. Look how much money you can pour into other programs by doing so. We really want to work with you to bring this very viable practical, implementable program as the baseline, the fundamental baseline by which we can then weave that thread when we're talking about homiletics, we're talking about greening the parishes, and then we're moving into policy, and then we're moving up the ladder of engagement. These are these incremental steps. We want to be able to meet you and meet them where they are and then move up that ladder. So those are my opening comments, and I welcome any thoughts, questions. Thank you.
Great. Jose, first of all, thank you for incorporating so many of the questions that were set in advance into your opening statement. I appreciate that. It allows us to cover a lot of extra ground. One of the things that obviously our people are always interested in outreach. And so they're interested in outreach to connect with the local FCNL people in their communities, in addition to Catholics. And also a lot of them are interested in tribal leaders. Do you have some guidance in those two areas also?
So with regard to the friends, I would say I talked to my colleague, Emily Wurzba. Hope she gets a flood of emails. Well, I mean, as many of you know, in my experience, I have been blessed to work with Quakers, who many of whom are CCL members. And as you know, I would say FCNL in the faith world is the faith equivalent of CCL. They have an incredibly sophisticated, evolved understanding of how to work with Congress. So talk to Emily. I could go on and on about the structures and programs they have in place. That's emily@fcnl.org. Or just contact me, and then I can get you in contact with her. And then she, just like me, and spreading out to the Catholic community, she can then contact you with the Quakers who are active in your. With regard to tribes, and I gave this some thought, I haven't worked closely with NCAI for a couple of years. We have done some communication. But out of respect for tribal sovereignty, I would recommend that you contact NCAI, and I will get you that person. But out of respect for them and the tribes, I would go that way.
Okay. There's a lot of questions in the chat about, you know, could you ask this person, that person to endorse carbon fee and dividend? And could you just talk about how complicated it is in terms of the bishops themselves? I mean, that's the one people always come to me with, but that's a complex issue. It's not just simple and straightforward. So could you just say something about that?
Great. Okay. I would recommend, let me see. And sorry if I'm repeating myself. There needs to be a significant education process. Going down to this baseline that, for example, most priests today have not yet been educated in their theological training on care for creation. This is a relatively new phenomenon. It is, though, I would say, and it is official Catholic social teaching, and there's one of the seven themes of Catholic social teaching. But when you sort of examine them and say, you know, which ones are the Catholic Church emphasizing, this is the new kid on the block. So there's an unfamiliarity. I would say that, you know, some clergy are uncomfortable even talking about environmental issues because they're simply not educated. So if you start from there, and in a way you have to start from there, and then take it to, this is why we need a carbon tax, and that could be an A to G step. At the same time, I want to be able to work with you, and I've been trying to figure out ways in which we can start to educate Catholic clergy on the importance of a carbon tax, and that's going to take some sophistication, because we as well need to work through that chains in order to get in order to create those forums where we can have an educated discussion so that pastors and bishops can feel comfortable understanding this as a policy level, as a policy option. So I want to work with you on that. Yes. So I don't know if I answered that fully, but there's a lot of nuance there.
Yeah, I think you answered it both in the question here and then also in your opening remarks. I think, you know, one of the things that we always have to remember is in every case we're dealing with a unique human being. And as you said, we need to meet them where they are and then see what can come of that. So we're grateful for that. Jose, it looks like we could get you for questions for hours. So maybe we could get you back on a session on CCL community where we would just have an open Q&A. There's things people want to know about the Pope. There's things people want to know about all your background. So we would love to get you on for just a Q&A session. Again, you know, we've always been in awe of your work, and you know, thank you for making yourself available now. If you want to stick around for the next 10 or 15 minutes, we'd love to have you on, but we know how big your commitments are, that you might need to be attending to other things. So thank you again. It's just been a joy to have you on this morning.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Mark.
Great. Okay. Thank you so much. Good. Okay. So I asked Lene Pettengill, our development director, to jump on for a moment today. I asked her if she could come on and update us. You know, I read some of the comments people had made about how our year-end appeal is going. And so I asked her if she would please just come on and give us an idea of how it's going. So Ricky, can you unmute Lene's line and if we could ask her to say a couple of things.
Hey,
there she is.
I am super excited to let you know how we're doing with that year-end appeal with $600,000 matching gift pool challenge. The bottom line is we are doing fantastic. So the appeal launched on Giving Tuesday, which was November 28th. And we brought in over $100,000 in that first day. So a full six of our goal we met in 24 hours. Incredible. Now, after Giving Tuesday, I heard from a few of you who were concerned that we hadn't done well because we hadn't made our goal that day. And I think what was happening there is we had a different timeline in the past where we ended on Giving Tuesday. And we all had those fun memories of blasting through the bar and the goal that day. But this year, we have a crazy big goal of $600,000. And I knew we would need more time. So we began on Giving Tuesday. It goes all the way to the end of the year. So we have 23 days left, counting today. And right now, the total stands at over $385,000. And that's all thanks to your generosity and your willingness reach out to others to donate as well. So as Mark said, you can see those donor comments, which are so inspiring if you need a little pick-me-up. But also you can always see where we're exactly at with our progress on that campaign by going to citizensclimatelobby.org and clicking on the donate button. Okay, I think that's all. Thank you so very, very much for everything you've done, everything you are doing to make this campaign a success, and for your incredible generosity. Let's do this.
Okay, great, Lene. And one thing I would just add is almost 900 people have donated. That's amazing. Almost 900 people have donated, whether it's, you know, the $10,000 people or the $10 people. Almost 900 people. It's great. Cool, thank you. Okay, cool. I want to just give you everybody a real quick update on what happened in Congressional Education Day a few weeks ago. So before Congressional Education Day, we had 5,109 people call into their congressional offices. When I called one of my senators, Senator Feinstein, which they received 328 calls, the person answering the phone said, "We're getting a lot of calls. You guys are doing a great job." We ended up with 585 people. That's almost twice the amount of people we've ever had at a Congressional Education Day. We ended up seeing 433 offices. And then subsequently, you know, in the last few years, when we've done the analysis of the June reports, the dividend itself had been in the top three for a couple years in a row. So we did a briefing on the House and Senate side to talk about the dividend study itself. Alan Lerner, the author of that, was there. We had over 90 offices attend from the House and Senate, a really nice mix between Republicans and Democrats. So it was a really remarkable event for everybody who was able to be there. Thank you for being there. For anybody who supported that happening, thank you for making it happen. I'll give everybody a full account of what's happened after December so you get everything that's happened over the course of the year. But at this point, in every case of everything we measure, letters, meetings with members of Congress, et cetera, we've exceeded the highest total we've ever had for a year. So I'll give you exact numbers when we get through December and get a chance to report on this. But at this point, we've already exceeded every major target we've ever had for meetings with members of Congress, published op-eds, et cetera. Including we've had more endorsements this year than all the previous years combined. And again, just this month, 7 endorsements from municipalities. In terms of what we're doing, and then I want to show you a short video. In Canada, we're going to be supporting our year-end appeal in Canada also, and a couple of other things. You'll see it on your action sheet. You remember that last month in the U.S., we told you that we're going to ask you to be part of something we've been working on for about a year and a half, and that is, are we ready the day a bill drops? Do we think a bill's dropping tomorrow? No, we don't. But we want to be ready. We don't want to be caught off guard. So the process we've been going through, we've asking you to go through, this is the second month now, and this focus is more on the grass tops. The second part of the action is to help us cross the finish line on the $600,000. And as Lene said, we are well on the way. I'm super excited about that. And then there's a communication exercise. And so the communication exercise is what you might say over the holidays. Now, I don't think all of you should try this. I think you should all practice. But I think this is fraught with peril for many of us. So I recommend you practice. But I really recommend you trying it if you think you have a chance of success. We've all been burned on this before. Okay, I want Ricky to share with us a short 4-minute video from one of our chapters in Upper Michigan, and then I have just 30 seconds of comments after that. So can you share this, Ricky? Oh, for those of you who can't, it will be self-explanatory.
This is where we live, a small town in northern Michigan called Traverse City. This is our congressman, first-term Republican Jack Bergman. And this is the story of how we, a group of 14 high school students, persuaded him to join the Climate Solutions Caucus. The Climate Solutions Caucus is a group in the U.S. House of Representatives looking at policy options to address our changing climate. Half of its members are Republicans and half are Democrats. The caucus exists in large part through the work of the Citizens Climate Lobby, or CCL, a national nonprofit that trains citizen volunteers to advocate with elected representatives to take action on climate change. Our meeting with Congressman Bergman happened because of CCL. Here's the timeline of how we got there. In January, a group from our high school environmental club decided to make the trip to D.C. for the CCL June conference and lobby day. In April, we held a fundraiser concert to raise money for the trip. We had music, food, and a silent auction. We raised enough to cover round-trip travel and hotel costs. In June, we left Traverse City early in the morning and arrived in D.C. During the 2-day conference, we learned how to effectively lobby our members of Congress. Before we knew it, Lobby Day had arrived Tuesday morning and we headed for Capitol Hill. We had 3 meetings, 2 with our senators who were already on record supporting action on climate change. The big question was how our conversation with Congressman Bergman would go. The congressman welcomed us into his office. We started by thanking him for a specific vote he had taken to support the Great Lakes. Then, one of our members told a personal story of how a changing climate has had an impact on her family. By being respectful and clear, we helped the congressman to be engaged. Then we made her ask, "Will you commit to joining the House Bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus?" He thought for just a minute and then said, "I'll tell you what. Yes, I'm going to make a commitment to you today to join the caucus." After some big thank yous, we went out into the hall to celebrate. This is important. Representative Bergman is the co-president of the House freshman class, so his decision to join the caucus carries a lot of weight. More importantly, though, he is someone who was at one time outwardly skeptical about the role of humans in climate change. The fact that we, a group of ordinary high schoolers, can convince him to join the discussion on an issue that matters so much to us bodes well for the ability of young people to shape their democracy. It still feels surreal that he said yes, but one thing I know is that if we hadn't been there, there would have been no one for him to say yes to. We were there, though, and the caucus, now one Republican stronger, is one step closer to bringing about meaningful action on climate change.
I've learned a ton.
It definitely makes me so much more optimistic about democracy and politicians listening to voters.
It's really amazing that a group of high schoolers not even able to vote still have a powerful voice in Congress.
I have a voice, and my fellow students and just every other millennial out there has a voice in politics.
If you truly invest yourself in a project or you truly care about something and you make your voice heard and you go to CCL meetings and do all of these things for the issues that you care about, then there will be impact from what you say. And that's definitely something that I didn't think of before.
Great. Okay. Well, everybody, how cool is that, right? There is one bonus action that I forgot to mention. Peter Joseph and his extraordinary team are competing the MIT CoLab contest again this year. They got invited back because their proposal was so good. If you don't know how to vote on that, we want to win the popular vote at least again, and that will be in next week's newsletter. So please make sure that you vote early and often, as they say. Okay, so then just one last thing about those group of high schoolers. And yes, we will get the video out to everybody who wants it. We'll make sure that you can distribute this. So whether you donate your time, or you donate your money, or you donate both, those are the kinds of things you're helping to make happen. As David so eloquently said, here's high school students who can't even vote yet, but are making their voices heard with the Congress. All right, everybody, thank you so much. We'll see you in January. Have a great rest of this month, and we'll be talking to you the first week of January. I'm thinking 2018 sounds like a very good year for us. All right, everybody, thank you so much.
This is something that Brian was
Goodbye before I leave the meeting.
Really want to hear from John.
Okay, so the first thing on the agenda is Troy CPL chapter has started an initiative to get a few college students to next year. Environmental justice group in Detroit, as well as Wayne State University and Jim Pine, who is in Detroit, also contacted Aruba after for Trevor Taylor to work with her on getting a
national
student. So they're going to be national application online to apply for a grant.
Oh, that's the Republican $200.